Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Flesh and Blood and Bone podcast. I am filmmaker Kira Gardner, and I am here with my special effects father, Tony Gardner.
That's me.
That's him. Welcome to 2025. It's already been a year somehow. Yes. We come to you live from California, and our hearts go out to everybody affected by these Los Angeles fires right now. We'll talk a bit more about that later, but today's episode is on the 1994 film Cabin Boy.
Yay.
Yay, says Dad. It's the 31st anniversary of the film this month. It was released in January of 1994. So happy 31st birthday to Cabin Boy and all your weirdness. Now, I had never seen Cabin Boy, but from my childhood and memories and things around the shop here of my dad's, I just knew it involved a wooden figure lady, a blue-armed blue-skinned six-armed lady, and like a moon face man that used to exist in the shop at one point here. And I had no idea what the context was, and I'm so glad I finally watched this film to understand what the hell was going on. I finally have context for everything. And after diving into the behind the scenes of it online of what I could find, there's an episode actually of Movie Magic, episode one. They do some behind the scenes of Cabin Boy, which you are in.
And Hocus Pocus at the same time.
Yes. And I was trying to find this footage from Hocus Pocus forever during our Hocus Pocus episode. And I couldn't because it was marketed as the Cabin Boy episode of Movie Magic. So that's why I couldn't find it. So you can also see some cool Hocus Pocus behind the scenes in that same episode that's on YouTube. But anyhow, I have so many questions on the making of this movie because it's so odd. And now we have some insider scoop from somebody who was actually there.
Yes.
And whose makeup, to my opinion, stands the test of time. It was very good. So we'll break down his SFX chronologically as they appear in the story. But I just want to give a little bit of context to those who have not seen the movie, maybe, so you can follow along with us, whether you've watched it or not. But I'm going to read because I have the memory of a goldfish and I can't do it otherwise. So let's go back in time. It's the 1990s. Chris Elliott, much of people know today from his role on Schitt's Creek, but he's been acting and writing forever. He has his own little segment on the late night show with David Letterman. And one of the other writers is Adam Resnick, who I believe, look, I don't know Chris Elliott personally, but I believe they're good friends to this day and they still work together, which is really cool. And that was from 1988 to 1989 or something around that time period, which you were doing The Blob around then.
Yeah, we did The Blob in 88.
Yes. So shortly after we get into the 90s, and Elliot and Resnick, they did a TV sitcom called Get a Life that aired from 1990 to 1992. So they worked on that together. And then after that collaboration, they co-wrote Cabin Boy. So that's some backstory there. Now, what's interesting about this film is the pre-production, which I was kind of talking to you about earlier before we sat down to film. The film was originally supposed to be directed by Tim Burton, but just have Adam Resnick as a co-writer. But Tim Burton left to do Ed Wood at the time, what he was offered. And so instead, he stayed on as a producer, and Adam Resnick came and filled in as director.
Yeah. And Tim came on set sometimes and checked out the characters and stuff like that.
Casual.
Tim. Because he designed the, you know, like Callie and stuff. He did some really cool stuff.
That was going to be one of my questions. My first question was, when were you brought into pre-production? Was Tim Burton still on as director or had it switched over?
I was never aware that he was going to direct it. So it was past that point. It was Adam Resnick and Tim Burton was producing and Denise DeNovi was producing, I believe, who is Tim's producing partner. And then they had the same cost, their usual costume designer was on board. So it's like, oh, this is a really great group of people. This will be really fun. But I had no idea Tim was originally going to direct it.
That's crazy, because that seems to be the buzz online.
Wow.
There seems
it's
to be...
It's gotten like a weird following over time. And it's interesting that, you know, people are very, not obsessive about it, but really into it, which is really kind of enjoyable, because it's a very odd movie. I mean, intentionally very odd, with a very odd sense of humor. And it's like Gentlemen Broncos. It's like you like it or you don't.
Yes, yeah. That seems to be the determining factor. On Reddit, it was like people could come up with quotes constantly, or everybody else was like, I hate this movie. And there was no middle ground, which is so interesting that you didn't know. But now I'm like geeked out that you... we're looking at character designs by Tim Burton.
Oh, they were great. I mean, it was totally what you would expect. I mean, that's why Callie, the six-armed lady, has that sort of green-blue skin. And I mean, think of all the Tim Burton-isms that have, you know, sort of come together over time, whether it's Miss Argentina or...
Yes. Oh, for sure. It's like whatever. The exact same tone.
Yeah.
That's so interesting. Because you can see, despite him staying on just as producer, the influence, it's definitely got his hand of magic and everything.
And I thought that it was my opinion that a lot of the animated stuff, whether it was stop motion or weird puppet stuff, was more of what he was bringing into it. Because we were doing... characters that were live action, but they'd go to a wide shot, like the shark boy.
Yes, Chalky.
And it would be an animatronic puppet swimming away. So we'd sculpt the whole thing. And then we would, you know, the whole makeup and do all that. And then we would sculpt a miniature version of it as a stop motion puppet.
That's crazy.
For somebody else to like animate and do whatever. So it was an interesting experience.
That's wild. Yeah, it seems now a thought that I had was maybe, and correct me if I'm wrong, because you were actually there and what do I know, but a thought I had was maybe it's a very crazy story. Mm-hmm. There's, you think it's set in modern day and then you think it's not. But
it's kind of just Seventh Voyage of Sinbad kind of thing. Yeah. Where a guy in normal life, guy at school that doesn't fit in, sets sail and with some sailors as their cabin boy and proves himself. And
but does he though?
Slays the monster, which is the giant.
Played by this one guy that was on The Office.
Mike Starr.
Yes.
Yeah, he's great.
But because I had seen Tim Burton was originally attached, and my curiosity was maybe if the budget had gone down or something after he left. Or
I don't think so. I think it was always financially challenged.
Because there's so much going on.
There's just a lot in it, and it's an odd script for anybody to go, oh, yeah, we're going to make our money back on this right away. Yeah. You know, so it's...
What?
You know, it's not an experimental film, but it's definitely...
It tried some
things. Its own thing, yeah.
Some things worked and some things didn't, but that's like everything.
Yeah, and hats off to trying and being willing to do stuff that's different, you know?
Yes.
Because everything's, at least nowadays, so homogenous.
Yeah, very true. One question I had, I was reading an article from a site called Nathan Robbins Happy Place. So credit to them.
Go Nathan.
Yes. And I read one of his thoughts on it. He posed the question, would Cabin Boy be better had it been directed by Tim Burton in his prime? And I thought that was an interesting way to pose it, because Tim Burton was just coming off of Edward Scissorhands and Batman, which were both very big box office successes. But you can still see Tim Burton's influence. But I wonder, because Adam Resnick was a first-time director, if maybe they're, like, if it was in Tim's head, maybe it would be shot more cinematically for the story in ways that Tim Burton was used to, rather than, like, more conventionally or to serve the dialogue. I don't know. Does that pose any question for you?
No.
No thoughts.
No, I mean, it's like, woulda, coulda, shoulda. Like,
no, for sure. Not to harp, you know, on it, but it is like just interesting.
It was made the way that it was made, and that's the movie.
That's the movie. Know?
What if it was directed by Bozo the Clown and it has circus music the whole way through? It's like you could twist it any weirdo way you want, you know, but it's treading new ground and trying new things and giving Chris Elliott an opportunity to play. And it had some really great, odd casting choices for a lot of the characters and just weird twists on things that, you know, that they put their heart into 100%. And yeah, so did we.
Yes.
Which is great. It's like, sure, a cupcake shows up and says a couple of lines floating in a hallucination and spits at you. And then
you never see him again.
Yeah. And Doug Beswick was hired to do just that one scene and did an amazing job. And
yeah,
it's very memorable.
Yes.
There's just lots of weird stuff.
Yeah. I also would
imagine.
And
David Letterman shows up in a cameo.
Yes.
And you know, hey, you want to buy a monkey? And
Arguably one of the best actors, in my opinion, in the film. No, because he's really good. Just because you can tell he has that rapport with Chris Elliott from them working together. So when he's kind of insulting him and he calls him Susie and things like that, it's so casual that it really works. But it's just curious. I was just curious because coming into something that you weren't originally supposed to direct, but he co-wrote, so he obviously knew it front ways and backwards. But if somebody else has a different vision at the top of it, it must have been hard to come in and navigate it. And I still think, like, it's a big task to take on.
So that's
interesting. I wonder how he feels about it.
I don't know. It'd be cool to ask him.
Adam Resnick, if you're watching or listening to this, please let us know if you'd like to revisit talking about this movie, sir. Or Chris Elliott, which, by the way, is so weird because this was your first time working with Chris Elliott, and then you worked with Chris Elliott on Scary Movie 2.
We worked with Chris Elliott on Something About Mary.
And that as well. So it's weird how that happened.
You just, you know, work with
the same folks casually. What did you think of the script when you first got it?
I thought it was really weird, and I thought it was really funny and strange. It read weird, but like it was sort of pitched as, you know, Jason and the Argonauts are Seventh Voyage of Sinbad, and it's normal guy goes into a weird world and beats the odds and succeeds, and that was very enjoyable. And reading it as a makeup effects guy, you're going, oh, cool. There's a shark man and there's a wooden figurehead that comes alive. And there's so many different ways to do that. It's really interesting to see. It's going to be interesting to see what direction they want to go with this, you know. And then the casting choices were interesting because it's like Ricky Lake is the figurehead. And it's like, hey, can we strap you on the front of a boat? And can we do this whole makeup on you while you're strapped to the front of a boat? Standing on a little platform.
Had she ever had prosthetic work done before?
I don't think to that extreme nature. I don't know that anybody had, because she was totally covered in foam latex prosthetics to look like she's made out of wood. And, you know, we even talked about doing contact lenses to look like wooden eyes. And it was like, that was kind of like where the line was drawn. Let's keep a little more humanity into it and make it a little more whimsical. And a little more fun and maybe not as what could be inferred as creepy. So, you know, because we talk about wooden teeth, too, and
oh my
all
God.
Sorts of different things.
George Washington up in here.
But then, like, she, you know, the boat's out for a long time and she grows a beard. And then they go through the
iceberg,
the ice, and she's got icicles all over her. And so we got to, like, do some silly stuff on top of the character stuff, which was which was really great.
That's interesting. Of like the choice, everything's a choice, right? The whole a whole movie getting made is just a bunch of people making choices, and whether or not you agree if they're considered right or wrong for the movie is up to you. But that's really interesting of not choosing to do contact lenses, because then it might be too real, like it would look all so wooden that you would lose a sense of human
and the person inside it.
Yeah.
And then like Russ Tamblyn, who's the shark guy. I mean, he's in West Side Story. He's a dancer. He's an amazing actor and very, you know, he's an amazing dancer and very physical. So he was great in that. We're gluing him into this tale, and you know, then you sort of have to kind of cart him around.
Yep.
A little bit, and to make stuff work. And then he's going on rigs, and we had like a half tail, and he'd be on a teeter totter, and they had like a dry for wet set where he could be swimming underwater. And then, you know, he's got a sword and for no apparent reason.
Oh, I didn't even notice that.
On a sheath or like a sash around his waist. And so he's got some props he can play with. And then he's supposed to try and break the hull of the boat and do a bunch of stuff there. And he has no dialogue.
No.
He doesn't speak. He's underwater and he's just the shark boy.
Chalky.
Yeah.
The legend of Chalky.
Yeah.
Couldn't tell you what the legend is offhand, but something like that.
So, yeah. So it's like just interesting, weird things thrown into this soup of this guy's crazy adventure on a boat.
On the Filthy Whore is what the ship is called.
Yep.
And did the script change much from when you read it to finishing?
No. And I mean, to be honest, we were only on set for the effects stuff. So if other scenes change, I'm not aware of it. But all of our stuff stayed true.
Okay.
You know, because we had to like rehearse and choreograph like all the hands moving for Anne Magnuson's character and all that. And it's like, what are they all doing? And
yes.
You know, and she's trying to figure out motivation to keep her hands up. And, and you know, like one hand ended up with a nail file and the other one has.
Oh, interesting.
You know, it's like we're trying to give the hands stuff to do
too.
Yeah, which was great.
Yes.
And she was really good. So.
Yeah. There's just if you haven't seen this movie. Sorry, I was not in the microphone when I said that. So sorry. If you've not seen this movie, just to touch on the plot a little bit before we get too further into the characters and the design so you know what's happening. Yes, I'm going to read again off my notebooks because I can't otherwise. So the film follows Nathaniel Mayweather, played by Chris Elliott, who is a fancy lad graduating from school. He's self-entitled, arrogant, and snobby, and is supposed to set sail on his dad's ship, or like he says, daddy's ship, Queen Catherine, to go to his dad's hotel in Hawaii. Nathaniel insults his limo driver, who then kicks him to the curb, and Nathaniel is forced to find his way to the port. He makes a wrong turn at a fishing village and is greeted by a fisherman, played by David Letterman, and gets directions to port. However, Nathaniel accidentally boards a ship called the Filthy Whore, and first mate Kenny, played by Andy Richter, is who he meets first. Nathaniel thinks the filthy boat is an interactive theme and is excited to set sail with this ragtag crew. He discovers several fishermen, one played by Brian Doyle Murray, talk about interesting casting, who is also Captain Knuckles on Flapjack, so love him, who tell him that the ship won't land for another 3 months. So in the middle of the night, Nathaniel tries to get Kenny to set sail for Hawaii instead and accidentally sails them into Hell's Bucket, which is where they meet a lot of these weird, kooky characters that a majority are your guys' work, but also people like Doug Beswick and things like that contribute to the special effects team. Now, the first encounter from your guys' work is this figurehead we were talking about, the wooden figurehead on top of the ship that is played by Ricky Lake. We kind of already talked about her look, but how did you go about figuring out how to strap an actress to a ship head Also, while she's supposed to look wooden, but you kind of have to be flexible to be able to stand up there on that small little ledge. How do you guys talk about the practicality of that?
It was kind of a figure it out as you go kind of thing. They gave us a mock-up of the front of it with the little platform she would stand on. And then we designed sort of like the structure that would support her, cause the cosmetics of the structure, so that that sort of like red scroll kind of thing that sort of holds her up. And then that actually became sort of the front of a pulpit that supported her and kept her safe from going forward. And then the effects team and the riggers had her, there was a whole harness for her to wear that connected her to the boat, because they had the boat, the front of the boat built and going up and down and water
splashing
and stuff like that. And she was on board and for it. And we also built a dummy version of her that they could have there all the time, so she didn't have to be there all the time,
right?
Because she wasn't always quote unquote alive or interactive. She was sometimes just the figurehead. So we had to match the makeup and make something that could fit on that shelf to replace her, that looked just like her at her proportions, in a pose that was comfortable for her to do. So we started with that, and then we figured out how to design it as a suit for her to wear, realizing that when we're in looking at her as a live version of mm-hmm. the figurehead, we're really only waist up.
Right.
So our suit, our foam latex suit, existed from like maybe mid thigh up.
Okay.
So she could be comfortable the whole other time, as much as possible, you know, but she had foam arms, and she had a prosthetic makeup, and then she had a foam hairpiece, and then she had like a urethane foam and latex vest piece that was the body of the thing. And that helped kind of hold her sort of rigid.
Okay.
And allowed it so that just her arms moved, and it sort of helped her performance wise as far as, you know, being able to be wooden, as it were.
Speaking of Ricky Lake's makeup and things, I was going to dress up as her for this episode. If you follow us on YouTube, you'll know I'll try and dress up as a special effects character that my dad's team did each episode. But that is hard and time consuming, and sometimes I don't have the time for it. So that did not happen. I tried to dress as like a sailor.
Oh.
With this shirt and this beanie, and that's as far as I got. But when I was originally attempting to do a makeup for this episode, it was going to be Ricky Lake's character. And I had a very hard time on YouTube discovering like wooden grain SFX. Like, there's just not a lot of tutorials about that. So is there a reason that you guys went with full prosthetics instead of doing a makeup look?
Yeah, because we wanted it to look weathered and okay. have a little bit of shine, like lacquer to it. But we wanted the wood to have creases and some depth to it, like pieces had separated unevenly and stuff like that. So, and she worked for more than one day, so we had to make multiples and they all had to match.
Fair.
So like we did the head piece that was the hair as something that was reusable. The vest and the arms were reusable. And then the neck had to tie into all the deep textures in that, and the face and all. So that was all sculpted. And
dang.
Yeah. And that was true. All Mike Smithson's character. He did an awesome job.
Which, by the way, if you're listening to this, please go check out our YouTube channel. My dad just handed me a huge folder of behind the scenes photos he has from Cabin Boy. And it's really interesting, the process, the behind the scenes process for some of this. But Mike Smithson, I had posted something on Instagram for Cabin Boy on Instagram, and I don't know these people offhand, so I don't think to tag people right away. And Bill Corso is the first one every time I post something to be like, that's this guy. So thank you, Bill. So I wanted to make sure we shouted him out, because I didn't originally tag him in the Instagram post.
We did eventually.
Yeah, you did. I didn't see it.
Yeah.
So, random question. It's funny, because this film is about 15 years prior, but working with Ricky Lake, who plays Tracy Turnblad in the original Hairspray film. And then you go on to work on John Travolta for Hairspray in the 2007 movie.
Somewhere in there. Yeah.
Was that weird?
It was great. Yeah. And she was in that as a judge.
She was?
Yeah. She and Adam Shankman, the director, and I forgot who the third person was. They're all like in the audience when Edna does her big dance scene at the end.
Oh, wow.
So she had a cameo. So I got to see her again.
And how was that?
It was great.
Aw.
Yeah. And, you know, she survived with us and looked on it fondly, I think.
We hope, yeah. Ricky. If not, it's not my fault.
Yeah.
It's interesting because the wooden figurehead, it is in the film as a way to also tell the story. When they've been on the boat a long time, she has a beard. And when it's freezing, she's cold and things like that. But screen time wise, she's actually not in the film that much, but it's such a process. You had a life caster and all these things.
Yeah, it's a big build for that.
And I feel like that was maybe the theme for several characters, because with Russ
Tamblyn?
Yes. With Russ Tamblyn, you also had to, did you life cast him?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And even, correct me if I'm wrong, is it a cloud guy or a moon man?
It's a cloud guy.
Okay. So
it's the wind blowing is what it is.
Okay. So for the
wind supposed to be like in old maps, they would have that face with the big puffy cheeks blowing air. That's the wind blowing him off course or whatever.
Oh, in the comp, for some reason, it looked like the moon. Okay.
It might just be the color choice.
That's
fair. We experimented with a couple different colors for that.
So for the wind cloud man, it also is a life cast. So yeah. It seems like it was a lot of long processes for makeups that, aren't screen time that long, but do make a lasting impression, because every ounce of this like adds to the magical quality. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's just something to share. It's not really a question.
No, it's just the way the show went. Like for the wind, we cast, Tom Williamson, one of the guys in our shop, to be the wind, the cloud face.
Cloud face.
We did two different cloud faces on him, so he could be two different characters. It's like, oh, he's here, he's in the shop, he's convenient, he can do the performance. We built a fiberglass skull cap on him with like sort of a flat fiberglass plate.
Wow.
And his prosthetic face went out wide onto this plate. And then we could film him, you know, kind of staying mostly stationary, but then they could use that continuation of the cloud in the sculpture to map into the animated stuff. And this is way back when, before a lot of stuff was, yeah. I mean, water tank, forced perspective, miniatures.
Yes.
You know, there's a lot of stuff going on in this, but all those old adventure movies had all those same techniques. So that's what kind of made it fun for all of us. It was like our childhood movies, just really messed up version of them.
Very weird versions with hallucination cupcakes.
Yeah.
Involved.
Yeah. There's some good stuff.
Yes. Which is really cool because they don't do this stuff really anymore that often.
Yeah.
So that's so cool. I want to make a movie that does all this stuff that we're talking about one day. But
and there's little stuff in there that's throwaway stuff that we had to build just for a scene that you don't
really see.
Yeah. Like when Mike Starr picks up Chris Elliott, we had this little minute, we built a miniature Chris Elliott.
For context, Mike Starr is a giant in this world.
Yeah.
So he picks up regular size Chris Elliott, but he's mini in his hand.
Yeah. And then the three sailors from the Filthy Whore, Brian Doyle Murray, and I forgot the other two guys.
Sailors.
Names. We had to do little miniatures of them in a miniature canoe. Because they row out to try and help, I guess. And then Mike Starr, the giant, who's wearing a suit and tie because he just came home from work, is out in the water and picks up this boat and flings all these guys. You know, it's old movie, old serial movie kind of stuff. But it's like weird twist. And it's like, if you think about it, it gets even weirder and sillier because it's like, okay, Mike Starr, the giant, is married to Callie, the six-armed lady who's like seducing
sort of a goddess,
Chris Elliott, but she to him is the size of a Barbie doll.
And so how does that work?
You exactly. know That's my point.
How do they get together?
So there's a lot of like goofy stuff like that in it.
Yeah.
It's pretty fun.
Which is interesting. Yeah. So much so that there was miniatures I didn't even realize were in this movie until you pointed out, which also says good job to you. Well, not that I'm the defining factor.
Some of them are obvious though, like the shark guy swimming away.
Sure. You know. Or like when the giant is holding Chris Elliott, it's a big oversized hand.
Oh, and the big hand too. Yeah. That was kind of pumped out fast. And I don't think we had a reference of the actor where we just kind of winged it. And
that's okay.
I think the hand comes in and towards the boat as well, towards Ricky Lake.
Yeah.
At one point. So it was used a couple times.
Yeah. But that's
just a giant posable hand on a crane, like an old, you know.
It's like King Kong.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh. Except they're like, hey, Tony, can you guys do this in like 3 days? And you're like, yeah, sure.
But that's kind of the fun of it.
Yes. You know? Well, as you pull your hair out. Where did you guys film this? Was it always going to be on a stage? I assume everything was
all
going
of our
to be.
Stuff was so weird. It had to be a controlled environment. You know, like all the underwater stuff.
Yeah.
You know, there was a... we shot it up towards Magic Mountain and the sound stages up there.
Oh, okay.
And they did a water tank with like a drop... I forgot what you call it, where the end of the tank sort of disappears.
It gradually goes down.
It just... fades off in the way it's lit. It looks like the ocean goes on forever, but it's, you know, it's a
fake.
It's
fake.
A cheat.
Yeah.
Basically in a water tank with a scrim behind it and stuff like that. That was all old movie style, techniques and it worked really well and gave them a place where they could bring in the cranes and the wind machines and
yes.
whatever else and make stuff work. I don't know that. I think only the exteriors were shot practically, like before he gets on the boat.
Yeah.
But after he's on the boat, it's all.
And then when they land in on the island that they land on, I was watching this with my boyfriend and he goes, that's Malibu. And I was So they shot in California, which is funny. In movies like this, this is just a director's question now. When there's like this mythology, right, of like the world they're creating, because it's not real, but there's some parts that are grounded in reality. Is there ever like a, does the director ever sit down with you and is like, here's the mythology and this is kind of how our world is and you can take liberties with that or not? Or
I think for us, it came more from here's the designs that Tim did for the six-armed lady and what her wardrobe will look like and what her skin tone is.
Okay.
And then Colleen Atwood was the costume designer who's done all Tim's movies. And she's like, I want to hang drapes from the wrist to the armpits so that there's more movement when the arms move so that everything is like sort That's of magnified. And it's all these layers of all these different people contributing to it. But for us being makeup effects, it was more... people on the, like the art department side, like we would paint up the shark and it's like, okay, well that's the color of a shark, but what can we do to make it more dynamic? And then we would like say, can we like stripe it and maybe do a little bit of barracuda kind of stuff on it? And we would share that with Adam and, you know, everybody else basically. And then there'd be sort of this, you know, singular response like, yeah, that's great. Go for it.
That's cool.
Yeah. There were some tricks to some of it for us, like getting a shark fin to stay on a guy's back while he's also in a tail and stuff like that, that we tried to make the mechanics of it not look obvious so that you could enjoy the performance more, you know? And like with Callie, it's like Ann Magnuson is very petite and it's like, okay, she's not going to be able to wear a harness with six arms.
Six animatronic arms, correct?
Yeah, with cables off of them. And it's like, there's going to be puppeteers on the ends of all those cables. So how do we hide them? And how do we make this work for her? And how do we allow her to do more than just sit there locked into some
chair
frame? So we made this sort of back shell on an arm, and we got it to the height of her back when she was seated in her boudoir little area. And it was sort of sprung loaded so that she could move forward and backward, and it would keep pressure on her back. So the arms would travel with her, and we didn't limit her. And then once in a while we tried to, like, you know, sort of steering wheel it from below, kind of like tip it to the sides as well. But we were trying to work with her to create, like, you know, she's reaching for something and the whole thing moves with her, and then she picks it up, and then she passes things to different hands and stuff like that. We were trying to make it look like there was a character there, and we didn't want anybody to pay attention to the mechanics of how it worked. And then the back of her little throne area is really like mesh. So we're all like standing and like right behind her, puppeteering the hands so that we can see practically what she's doing, because it's not an exact science.
And
two guys are doing this arm and two guys are doing that arm. And it's like, you're going to pass this off while her real arm is trying to move in the style of the fake ones so that they all seem believable. So it's really like this weird little concert, and she's the conductor, and we're trying to follow her lead. And the challenge made it really fun at the same time, but hopefully you don't notice the mechanics as much as you pay attention to the character. That's kind of the ultimate goal.
For Callie's inspiration, isn't there a Hindu goddess god that has multiple arms and is blue?
Yeah.
Is that...
Well, I don't know about the skin tone, but there's the multiple armed goddess, and they're in, I want to say, Jason and the Argonauts, one of those, I think that's the one, one of those old adventure movies from the 70s. There's a six or eight arm statue of her that comes alive, and every hand has a sword in it, and it's a stop motion scene, and this Sinbad does battle with it, you know, and battle skeletons and all sorts of stop motion.
I watched the behind the scenes of that stop motion fight. It's insane what they did.
Yeah, it's amazing stuff. And I think this movie, you know, I think Cabin Boy is very much an homage to those movies of the 70s.
That would track. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So Tim Burton, sorry to just keep going back to Tim Burton, but online, it seems like some people are like, this one website had a picture of, I don't think you're in the picture, but Adam Resnick, Chris Elliott, and Tim Burton. And they're like, so Tim Burton was on set for at least one day. We know that. Like, there seems to be, they're like, he wasn't there. But so he was on, you met him and he was on set.
Yeah, Tim Burton came to set one of the days where we were shooting Chalky the Shark Guy.
Oh, interesting.
And came in and took a look at the makeup while we were finishing it up. And,
oh my God.
And sort of like, you know, we got him to sign off on some of the design lines that we were adding to it to try and make it a little more interesting.
How is he?
He was great. He had a lot to do on that. And he was, I think he had a very short amount of time he was on set. And he was moving and getting stuff done.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. Okay. Now let's talk about this hallucination cupcake. It's Doug Beswick's thing. Uh-huh. So there was overlap in some degree.
No.
Nothing.
It's completely separate from us.
I see. Well, I didn't dress up today, but I did make I did make for us here some of our very own.
That's
they're
hilarious.
Very bad hallucination cupcakes. So I made them last night and this morning.
That's hilarious.
So our new editor Jared, I made a cupcake for you as well.
Thank you very much.
And for anybody in the back of the shop today, so they're chocolate cupcakes with vanilla frosting.
Oh, can't beat that. That's great. Thank
yeah, you. Very hard to make an actual hallucination cupcake, but that was my attempt as one does.
Thank you. That's very nice.
Yes. We will eat those later.
Yeah.
To give some context for the hallucination cupcake, at one point, the fishermen on the Filthy Whore are fed up with Nathaniel, and they kick him off to this raft that's being tugged along by the boat. And while he's out there for 9 days, Chris Elliott's character gets heat exhaustion and then starts hallucinating because he's also eaten some moldy bread. So from that, this giant cupcake comes out of the sky and then spits on him. And then that is what causes Chris Elliott to fall into the ocean, where he's rescued by Chalky, the half-man, half-shark character. And then his life is changed and he's like, I'm going to be a better person. And right after that, they happen to meet this woman, Tammy, who is in the ocean. We think maybe she's dead, but she's not. And so he puts a net over her, and turns out she was trying to set a record for swimming across the ocean. So that's why she's there. And then it sounds crazy when you try to explain this movie. And then she's on the boat. And the next morning, it's cold because the figurehead, Ricky Lake, is shivering. So we know it's cold. And there's icebergs ahead. And one iceberg is live. And it stop motion style comes to life and attacks them all. And I forgot how they defeat it. Oh, coffee. They spray hot coffee on it, as one does. And they survive, and they're all a little ragtag team, and they sail to the shores of Hawaii. I mean, not Hawaii. They sail to the shores of what in real life is Malibu and explore the island while they try to repair their ship. There is where Nathaniel meets this six-armed woman, Callie.
In a cave.
And she kind of seduces him. She smokes a cigarette. And there's actually this website for movies called How Many Smokes or something like that, where they count how many cigarettes are smoked in a movie. So fun fact, there are 4 in this movie. And they have sex. And then like 5 minutes after that, Tammy's like, hey.
Oh, Trina.
Oh, yeah, Trina. Trina's her name. Gosh. Trina and Nathaniel also have sex. So that happens. And then the giant man who's married to Callie, the six-armed woman, comes home from, he's work. A luggage salesman.
I don't remember.
And he's having a hard time at work, and he's in a suit. And then he figures out that she was kind of getting frisky with other people, and he gets mad. And so he goes to find Nathaniel, and he thinks Nathaniel's on the boat, but he's not. And so he attacks the fisherman, and that's when he picks up the boat and throws it. And then Chris Elliott goes, and they fight. And then the shark comes, Chalky comes, and helps save the day. And then they all get away, and it's great. And they kill him with a pen and his own belt, and happily ever after, basically. And then they go to Hawaii, and then there's a cameo by Chris Elliott. Elliot's dad, and as his dad, and the light just went off. But and that's the movie.
But when you recap it like that, doesn't it sound like an episode of SpongeBob? Or
it absolutely does.
Or what's Gumball? Or I mean, any of those weird.
The Amazing World of Gumball, absolutely.
It's like so bizarre. It's like hats off to somebody trying to do it with live action.
Yes, and like. Money. Even if they had all the money in the world, it's still not enough money for a scope like that.
Yeah.
What was one of the most interesting experiences on set for you?
For me, it didn't have anything to do really with what we had to do. It was the days they were filming underwater, where it was dry for wet. And it was all about shooting lights into little pools of broken glass and moving the water so that there are reflections. And they had wind machines like lightly blowing the air so people's hair, you know, Chris's hair was up and then that would move. And then they had like little fibers and stuff that they would release into the air and they would float around in the air. And it just made it look more like you were in water. And then the guys doing the teeter-totters under Chris or under Russ as the shark man were pushing them around in this and trying to be very fluid in movement and stuff like that. And watching that all happen, you know, is really cool. That was like such an old technique, and to see it being done was cool, but then to see how successful it was awesome.
Yeah, that's interesting. My friend Gabe from film school did his thesis like that, the old school with green screen, mirrors on the floor with fans of water. And it actually was, granted, he was able to do like a digital overlay on top of everything at the end, but it's really cost effective.
Yeah, this one didn't have any green screen.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It was all just like they built the set out, you know, and then they lit it so that
I see
there was this sense of depth to it. It was really cool. I thought the lighting, I thought a lot of this stuff was very creative.
Is there anything that you learned or took away specifically from this project that you'd like to share or talk about?
This was in the
90s.
The 90s. And we were doing a lot of this stuff all the time. So it was just one more experience. And it was with a lot of people that we really enjoyed working with. So it was really fun.
Well, is there anything actually you want to talk about at all more, Dad?
What I really enjoyed about it was they hired actors that were up for the challenge of what we were doing. And they were committed to doing the best they could at it and making it work. You know, whether they were uncomfortable or not, they were really into their time as that character and helping us make our stuff look good. And they were really great to collaborate with.
Aw, I like that.
Yeah.
It's
a good group of people.
It's a good group of people. Well, that'll wrap it up for now. I encourage you to check out the Movie Magic episode as well on Cabin Boy. I'll link it in the description on this episode. But
forgive us our hairdos and our fashion sense.
It's a really cool fashion sense. First of all, don't even apologize. My fashion inspiration is honestly SFX men from the 80s.
From the 80s.
Yes, it's great.
All the SFX men from the 80s were trying to look like either rock stars or the vampires from Lost Boys.
Which, who doesn't want to be a vampire from the Lost Boys?
Yeah, it's all a mess.
Ah, gosh. Imagine if you actually were, though. That's fine. You were there. That's cool. We'll talk about that later. But that wraps it up for Cabin Boy. Please go follow us on YouTube as well. Something I would like to wrap up this episode with is right now there is the Palisades and Eaton fires as we're currently filming this, but maybe they are out by the time you are listening to this, hopefully, or whenever you choose to listen to this episode in the future. But for this episode in January, I talked to the artist who designed our Flesh and Blood and Bone logo, and we are going to put stickers on our Shopify account. I will put I'll put an overlay of what it is here and also in the description. But we are going to sell stickers on our Shopify, and 100% of the proceeds for January will go to World Kitchen Market, which helps feed first responders and those affected by the wildfires. So if you'd like a fun way to donate and help those affected, you can go to our Shopify account and purchase either a sticker or all of my Living with Chucky merchandise, posters, stickers, buttons. Everything on that site, 100% will go towards World Kitchen Market for January. So if there's anything you'd like to purchase there, I'd encourage you to do so. And also to encourage people to go purchase, we have this popcorn Chucky bucket from Halloween Horror Nights from last year.
Couple years ago.
Okay, a couple years ago. My dad got this for me. I am sentimental about anything my dad gives me, but I figured I have a lot of Chucky stuff and these were very popular. So we'll have my dad sign this Chucky popcorn bucket, and we will also put this on our Shopify, and 100% of the proceeds from this sale will also go to World Kitchen Market as well. So that's a fun item that's not usually up there that you can expect to see.
There you go.
So with that, is there anything else you'd like to add, Dad?
Nope. Just glad to be here.
Glad to be here. We are safe. We are thinking of everybody affected by the fires. If you can get out and donate anything, clothes, shoes, food, anything to either firefighter donations or to local donation centers, please do. And if you can volunteer, that seems to be the thing right now that's most important, since a lot of donation centers are actually overwhelmed with how much people are actually donating, which is amazing, but they have to sort through all of the donated items. So We hope you all stay safe, have a wonderful rest of January, and we will see you next month in February with an episode on the upcoming movie Heart Eyes, where my dad and his team designed the killer mask for.